I'm Gab. He's Jules. It's gray skies over West London today. But Jules, we have a packed show because massive news coming from just a few miles away. Roman Abramovich has said he's putting Chelsea up for sale. We're going to get into that. We're also going to get into all the cup action this week in the Coppa Italia, the FA Cup, the French Cup, Little Versailles, the fairy tale over. So sad, so sad. But let's start with Chelsea because this is quite extraordinary. I have a lot of questions. I feel that everything Roman Abramovich is, not him, but everything his people have put out in the last 4 or 5 days has been frankly clear as mud. So what we know, this is what we know from what I've read from the statement on Chelsea's website, is that he loves the club. He's going to put the club up for sale. It's not a quick sale. He's going to go through due process. And he's got £1.5 billion, around about $2 billion of credits, because obviously Chelsea have had losses over the years. Mostly in years past, and then with the pandemic now, of course. And whereas some owners decide to put money in as equity, and others decide to loan money to the club. They're obviously lending money to themselves because they own 100% of the club, right? So he's decided he's not going to call in those loans, supposedly. And he's going to take the net proceeds and set up a foundation to help victims of the war in Ukraine.
Yeah.
This is all positive and I think laudable. Definitely laudable from that perspective.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think it also raises several big questions that really don't make any sense to me. One of them, first and foremost, is why are you doing this? Mm. Why not just give the club away at that point, right?
Give the club away as in...
Well, if you're not going to have your $1.5 billion repaid. So normally what would happen is somebody would come, say they pay $2 billion, right? $1.5 billion goes to repay the debt so that the club can be debt free.
Yeah.
Right. And then you'd have $500 million left over, which he could devote to his foundation or whatever. Yeah. That's normally what you would expect to happen.
Yeah, because the net profit they mentioned, or net proceeds, right? What is net over what? Is it net over how much he spent himself in 2003 to buy the club, the $140 million to Ken Bates? Is it net once he got his money back from the loans? How do you define the net proceeds that he's mentioning on the statement?
This is one of my issues with this, because we don't know. I hope Chelsea clarify this. I hope Abramovich's people clarify this. They haven't clarified a lot of things very effectively thus far, from all the stuff with the trustees to the fact that he was going to go to Ukraine.
It's been a crazy few days.
It's been an absolutely wild few days. Even strange, too, was the fact that we know who some of the potential buyers are. One of them has come out and told us, and it's this man named Hans-Jörg Wyss, who's Swiss, but he's done a lot of work in the US and stuff. He's a big philanthropist, and he just came out and said, he's like, oh, Abramovich needs to sell because he's under threat of sanction, so he wants to get rid of all his assets.
And he said he wants to rid of Chelsea quickly.
This guy, Wyss, is worth about $3.5 billion from what we've read. He's like, I can't do it on my own, but if I get 6 or 7 other people involved, Todd Boehly, who owns the LA Dodgers, among other things, and who tried to buy Chelsea before in 2009, 2019, he's been mentioned. If I get 6 or 7 people together, we can all chip in and buy Chelsea.
Yeah. I mean, right now we have to say, not many people can buy Chelsea Football Club. Certainly, individually, it's almost impossible. I mean, it's always possible, but it would cost them half their fortune. Why would you spend all that money in one football club?
Let's give some context here on price, because I think, let's say, the report says that he wants £3 billion, or about closer to $4 billion, right?
Which is the 1.5 that the club owes him, plus I guess another 1.5, which he believes is the current valuation of Chelsea Football Club, right?
Yeah, it's what he thinks he could get. But just for context, just in terms of abstract valuation, I don't think no club has gone. I don't think there's any club that's gone even for a billion. Off the top of my head here, Manchester
Football,
United.
No, yeah.
We've had Manchester United go for
whatever it was under the Glazers. I think that's the highest or close to the highest. Mm. And we had AC Milan when it was bought by Li Yonghong for crazy inflated figure.
Yeah.
We saw how well that went.
Yeah.
So we're talking more than three times as much.
Yeah.
The single biggest sale of a football club thus far.
Yeah, we're almost in U.S. sports franchise territory here. You know, the Dodgers, obviously, I think if you wanted to buy the Boston Red Sox or
yeah.
the LA Lakers or the New York Knicks, this is probably what, but for football, you're right, it's unprecedented.
Let's get a little more granular here. Let's try mm-hmm. to break this down. First of all, the timing of it, right? The reasons why he's doing it. The standard reason that everybody puts out there is that
we assume,
although I think there might be other factors in play, is that because Roman Abramovich is Russian, he bought Chelsea, of course, in 2003, he could be subject to freezing of assets, sanctions against individuals, what we call oligarchs, wealthy Russian businessmen who made a lot of money during the years that Vladimir Putin was in charge of Russia. And so the thinking is, because of that, they're going to divest themselves of their assets. There's suggestions you know, he's selling some of his properties in the country and basically moving out. So it's like a defensive move.
Yeah.
Everybody takes this as fact, and maybe it is fact. My personal take on it, first of all, is I'm not 100% certain. And the reason is Abramovich hasn't been named thus far. Certainly in the list of people to be sanctioned or who have been sanctioned. Unlike, for example, Alisher Usmanov.
Yeah.
I'm assuming, I think it's well known that he has strong connections to the party that's currently in power in this country. So plus he's been kind of outside of Russia for many, many years.
And outside of London as well.
And outside of London too.
And the UK, yeah.
I'm not 100. I mean, I'm sure that plays into it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how effective a defensive move this is.
But do you think such a big move, selling a club like Chelsea, he must have been thinking about it before. He must have been thinking about it. You don't have, this is, if you want to buy Chelsea Football Club, You don't go on an app or on a website that shows you what kind of football club are for sale. You know, those kind of deals and those kind of news are shared through business dinners with people who are all billionaires. You know, Hans-Jörg Weiss doesn't just hear about Chelsea being on sale just like that by someone to send him a text. You know, this is discussions that would happen.
And
before,
in fact, we know that while he's denied that the club was up for sale. What's out the official line is equally at the same time, Chelsea have retained an advisory in New York called Rain, who basically are charged with kind of fielding interested parties.
Exactly.
And so we know that Todd Boehly was one of the people who supposedly in 2019 came in and, you know, I don't know if he actually made an offer, but certainly was reported here that he was willing to put 2.6 billion pounds, I think it was at the time, on the table. And those bids have been turned down. So we know that part.
Yeah.
We also know that Roman Abramovich, in round about 2018, after the poisoning of the Russian dissident, he had a business visa to be in this country, and that was revoked.
Mm.
That was obviously post-Brexit. And that had an impact too, because he actually, since then, he's acquired a European Union passport. He's a Portuguese citizen. He also has an Israeli passport, so he can operate in different countries. But I think he took it quite personally. You know, he had that investor visa. The visa wasn't renewed. And I think that's been part of the reason why he said, do I really want to keep doing this? I've been doing this for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
We've been very successful. You know, by this stage, they've won 2 Champions League titles, 5 Premier League titles. He's really built
to your party. They're the most successful asset. English clubs of the last 20 years. It's as simple as that, and maybe one of the most successful clubs in Europe, full stop.
So I think this had been maturing for a while. He had the very public divorce, which no doubt cost him money as well. I think he was moving on to a different phase of his life. So I think that was already happening
in place,
before
definitely.
All of this.
I agree with you. I think this goes back a few months, maybe years.
So
the war in Ukraine must have been the final straw. You think, I'm under pressure here. I would not pass it Boris Johnson or the UK government or whoever to, or to say, listen, if you sell Chelsea Football Club now, we leave you alone, kind of thing. Maybe not. Maybe we still have sanctions. We don't know. I just find the timing gap really strange in the sense that, okay, I know the war in Ukraine might have be the point where you thought, okay, this is the time to do it. I've got no choice. I have to do it now because of what's happening in Ukraine. Because this is the end of the season where a lot is at stake now for his team and a team that he loves and a club that he loves. This is going to be very messy, I think, for Thomas Tuchel and the players because the uncertainty that this will bring. You know, what if the new guy coming in doesn't want Tuchel as a manager? What if he wants to bring with his own people? What happened to Peter Cech, to Mara Granovskaya, to Bruce Buck, to a lot of those people who make this club the club that it is now and are very important.
I think
important.
Bruce Buck will be just fine, but yeah.
Maybe, but you see what I mean? But I don't know, you know, all of this is uncertain and for the players it's the same. So I think the timing could not have been worse, but maybe he had no choice. Maybe he felt like I have to do it, maybe to protect Chelsea, you know, and...
Maybe to protect his children.
To protect his children, yeah, and his own assets, as you said earlier. I don't really understand. There's so many question marks.
I also want to make this clear that as I understand it, right, you know, it is a big deal when a government freezes your bank accounts and your assets, right? If they freeze your bank accounts, that means that all this money that I have in my bank account, I can't use. I can't use to buy things. I can't use to support my other businesses and so on.
Yeah.
Plus, there's rampant inflation, and so it's worth less and less. I can't invest it, whatever. That's a big deal. And it's a big deal when if you freeze somebody's company, what it means is that they can't sell it, obviously, and they can't put money into it.
Yeah, can't invest in it.
In the case of Chelsea, I don't know that it really would have been such a big deal.
I agree.
If they had frozen Chelsea, because, all right, so it means that at the end of the year, if Chelsea rack up losses, and presumably they will, you know, he can't cut a check and loan them more money.
Yeah.
But Chelsea can take on debt. Chelsea can get financing from elsewhere,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, definitely.
The banks know that Roman Abramovich is behind Chelsea, right? Mm. So that part shouldn't have been an issue. People have suggested, well, what if the government were to seize Chelsea? And I just want to make this very clear.
That's surely not legally possible.
Surely that's legally impossible.
Completely.
Even freezing some of these assets, given the way these lawyers are, I think would have been very difficult.
Completely.
But what do you think the government's going to go and just take Chelsea away from him? And
just lock the doors at Stamford Bridge and no one can come in, no one can come out. I mean, that's why I'm struggling a bit. Because even if you look at freezing his account, okay, let's say the profit of the sale goes to the charity and the foundation that he's going to create for Ukrainian children. Great. But maybe we still make some money before maybe there'd be some money that still goes on his account before the profit or whatever. So why would he take the risk of cashing in on Chelsea? Let's put it that way, broadly. Yeah. Cashing in on Chelsea now, knowing that at any point they could freeze his account, which would be $1.5 billion more money on his account. Do you see what I mean? It makes no sense. If he wanted to cash in and take the money, surely would not be the right time to do, because there's that possibility that they will freeze, that the UK government will freeze his account anyway.
There's a bunch of other factors. And so when the deal happens, if the deal happens, one of the key things here is based on the covenant between, so Abramovich owns a company called Ford Stam, where he's the only shareholder, and they're the ones who loan money to Chelsea. Hmm. It's not like Ford Stam can go and tell Chelsea, hey, give me all the money back now, right? There's a procedure. These are distinct entities. He needs to give them 18 months advance warning for then Chelsea to pay the money back. So if there is a sale, and what would normally happen is the new buyer would say, okay, well, we owe you $1.5 billion. We're going to pay you $3 billion. You know, you write off that part. You know, essentially you deal with it, and we'll settle it that way, and we're all in agreement over it. So he couldn't have forcibly gotten that money out of Chelsea to bankrupt Chelsea anyway, even if he'd wanted to, not that he was going to. So I guess what I'm driving at is I go back to what he said with the net proceeds. I think Chelsea needs to clarify. Somebody needs to clarify.
Yeah, completely.
Because right now there's people running around saying like, oh, look, you know, he's going to sell the club for $3 billion. He's going to take all the money and put it in a foundation. If he does that, great. I would be super happy because
me too.
You look at what's happening in Ukraine. it's, you know, it's horrible. There's kids on all sides who are who are mostly on one side, to be honest, who are in terrible conditions, right? That's fine. That would be great. But did he say that that's what he was going to do? And if you're going to do that, are there other ways? Are there better ways of doing it?
Yeah.
You know, so I think all of this is going to come to the fore. In terms of the buyers, what I find interesting is if Bowie, look, between these two, right? So this guy Weiss he's 86 years old.
Yeah.
He's one of the biggest philanthropists in the world. He's given away, you know, he's worth like more than $3 billion, but he seems to have spent the last few years essentially giving his money away. He's involved in a lot of social and environmental causes, and that's great.
And, all sorts.
So then you wonder, I was trying to wonder, like, why would he be involved in this? Is he even a football fan? Does he maybe want to somehow be involved with this new foundation that Abramovich, since he's good at giving money away?
Surely not.
Well, it seems like a weird...
It's a business venture, right? Whoever buys Chelsea now.
He's 86 years old. I mean, actually, I don't want to be unkind here, right? He's 80. Like, I hope he lives to be 150, but he's 86 years old, right?
Yeah.
Like, what is his event horizon going to be that he wants?
I don't know. Maybe he's part of a consortium of, let's say, we have got two names now, but maybe they're four or five. They've got other very wealthy fund, you know, like investment funds people, or I don't know, whatever. And right now they all share, let's say, 25% each of the club. And then maybe he can stay for a few years and then sell his shares to one of the other guys. I don't know. A lot of things can happen. My thing is, you cannot spend that much money just because you love football. If you love football and you can buy a £100 million club and then this is your joy and you invest in it and try to grow it. Not when it's worth $3 billion. $3 billion can only be a business venture where you see a business opportunity there. You're not going to lose... Well, you might lose money, but is that? But you see what I mean?
I completely understand what you're saying. I mean, there are also some hurdles. I think Chelsea have done a great job thus far in maximizing their revenue streams. And this is partly down to the people that Roman Abramovich has hired and who've been running the club. I'm just talking from like commercially, right?
Revenues and stuff, of course.
If you go back,
club now compared to 2003 when he bought it.
I think worldwide,
it was always a great big club in England. But
I mean, the interesting thing is, if you look at sort of Chelsea historically, you know, they won a league title in the 50s, I think 54, 55.
Yeah, 55 was the last one.
And then they had, for a big chunk of their history in the 70s and 80s, you know, they won Cup Winners' Cup in 1970, but it's kind of a one-off, right? They spent a lot of time in the second division and so on. And then at one point, in the mid-90s, Ken Bates, who was then in charge of the club, later went on to live in Monaco, he just starts spending like there's no tomorrow, right? They take on an enormous amount of debt. The whole development around Chelsea, that was Ken Bates, it's Vialli, it's Hullet, it's Zola. They win the Cup Winners' Cup, they challenge for the title, and then they're on the verge of bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And that's when Abramovich buys them. So there was already a slight base there, and then he took it to another level. Mm. He built the brand globally just at the time that football was globalizing. Yeah. He took advantage of the rise of London and the fact that they're in West London, where, you know, the other two traditional big clubs, Arsenal and Spurs, are in North London and kind of close to each other, further away from the center town. All these things come together. I just wonder, how much more can you maximize it? People talk about building new stadiums so you can charge more and whatever.
Yeah, but that would cost $1 billion.
Well, he had a plan in place, of course. He had planning permission for it. And then he said, we're not going to redevelop it. Yeah. And this was around the time of his visa. So presumably you could still do it. It would be incredibly expensive because it's in a very expensive part of town.
Yeah.
They can't actually move it because of a deal that was made years ago when the club was on the verge of bankruptcy.
Because they looked at other places, yeah.
Well, there's a company called Chelsea Pitch Owners. And essentially what they say is you have to get their permission. They own the freehold, which is kind of like the land, if you will. And basically, under that covenant, if you move Chelsea somewhere else, you have to change the team, unless you have to change the name and the brand, right? So there's a lot of restrictions on this, and it just seems like an enormous amount of money to spend. So either you've got a really long-term view and you're engaging in this. People use the term sports washing, but you might use it. You view it as like a big PR move for your country, or you're an enormous fund, like perhaps Manchester City or Paris Saint-Germain. Otherwise, for an individual who's like, you know, unless he's a fan, he's like, I'm happy to lose money every year, a little bit of money, and so on. Which is what Abramovich had become.
At least the thing, apart from the stadium, is this is a time in the club where it's very healthy. In the sense that, if I explain myself, you're not at the beginning of the post-Ferguson era at United, for example, where the squad was declining. You had a lot of old players. You knew there was a lot of money to be spent to rebuild the squad and to make it competitive again, even if they just won the title. But we could sense it. This is very different with this Chelsea team. This Chelsea team is still on the up, or already up anyway. You know, Club World Cup champions, Champions League champions, all of that. So it's not like they, you know, you will have to spend money to keep the level as high as it is, but you've got a great manager in place who I don't see why would want to leave the club. You've got a great squad, one of the strongest squad in the league already and in Europe. Do you see what I mean? So if you come in, yes, you will spend a lot of money on buying the club, but after that, you already have you've got a diamond in your hands. It's not, you're not...
You have an expensive diamond in your hand that costs...
Yeah, but it's not Newcastle.
No,
United post-Ferguson or Arsenal post-Wenger. You know, you're not in that kind of situation. You're in a really good situation sporting-wise, footballing-wise.
No, I agree with you there. I think maybe one difference with United, which is always different, was that United's always profitable, right?
Yeah, so true.
It is easier to build from there. The other thing I would say, just on the sporting front, I mean, look, we'll know much more if the sale happens, when the sale happens. Mm. I agree with you that this is a club that's at its peak and needs built to win now, but they have some huge decisions to be making on their future, right? Christensen, Rudiger out of contract, Azpilicueta getting older, the midfielders, certainly Conte, Jorginho, both pushing 30. You've got decisions to make, you've got investment to make to remain at that level. And it'll be curious to see how things develop there. And look, there's other situations like this. We should give a mention to the situation at Everton, where Everton are owned by this man named Farhad Mashiri, who is a British businessman of Iranian descent, I believe. Mashiri's day job for a long time, he basically worked for a man named Alisher Usmanov, who was a shareholder at Arsenal, who he is on the sanctions list.
He's a Russian billionaire. Yeah?
He's a Russian billionaire who is
on the list.
On the list, and he's being sanctioned and he's being punished. Everton are trying to distance themselves. Usmanov's company, Everton have always said, oh no, it's not really Usmanov who owns it. Farhad Mashiri really has these hundreds of millions knocking about, and it's his money, not Usmanov's.
Yeah, of course.
I'm going to withhold judgment on that one. Draw your own conclusions because they're litigious. But they're trying to remove themselves. Usmanov's company signed a big sponsorship contract with Training Ground.
Yeah.
That's gone.
Yeah.
This is going to impact Everton
too.
Two
more companies were sponsors, like, you know.
And Everton are building a new stadium.
Yeah.
You know, they need this liquidity. I mean, they've got 100 other issues.
It's a big decision to take, to write off all that money, basically, coming from the sponsors.
It's a massive decision. I think this could have an even bigger effect on Everton.
But it's the right one, right? We agree that this is the right decision from an Everton point of view, like United did with Aeroflot, like Schalke did with Gazprom.
For my money, you know, I know there's an owners and directors test about who can buy a club. I wish the Premier League were much tougher and just, you know, maybe.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know, you need to go to the level of the NFL where, like, you know, one voter can veto, one owner can veto a new owner coming in. But they should think about the people who come in. And this is not just them. It's, you know, do we want national sovereign funds buying clubs?
Would you let Russian oligarch own a Premier League club?
But what does oligarch mean? If I have evidence or reason belief that this person is bad in terms of publicity, there are wealthy Russian people who haven't done anything wrong.
True.
I would want the case. I would want somebody seriously look at it and just say, look, this is bad for PR. And it's our decision. We're the Premier League. We don't have to explain it to you.
Yeah.
If I don't like this guy, instead they get stuck in this legal thing with lawyers. Look at Newcastle, right?
Yeah,
oh, separate legal entity. Yeah. Yes, it is. No, it's not. I mean, the Premier just League think about the way people look at you.
Yeah, and the Premier League are considering having they have those ownership tests before deciding if the guy can buy the club, and they will put human rights in that as well. So know in your past or what you stand for and if you've been linked with those kind of stuff, which is probably the right thing to do, as long as they really...
And I'll believe
take it on board, exactly.
And I'll believe it when I see it, when I see how it's applied, when I see if it stands to the legal test, because like I said, there's always, sorry if I go back to this, but there's always lawyers ready to scurry out of their little rat holes and go and tie up the courts with nonsense. So I personally, I think the Premier League should be allowed to do whatever they want in their own best interests and say, yeah, this guy, yeah, he's going to attract bad publicity. He's not going to make us look. It's going to hurt the whole league. Boom. And we don't have to explain it to you. You're just going to say no.
Yeah. You know, but I haven't really done so far. So.
No, and I don't think they're going to. I'm not even sure that they can. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough, Roman. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gav.
Liverpool defeating Norwich City 2-1 in the FA Cup with two goals from Takumi Minamino. Jules, these were basically B teams, but the quadruple's on.
Of course it's on. It's still on. I mean, Liverpool at home against Norwich, you knew exactly what would happen. I guess the Rupp goal, which is a lovely goal, by the way, made the last 15 minutes a little bit more interesting just because it was 2-1 and everything. But Liverpool were very much under control. Let's see who they face now in the next round. There's still some big teams. You know, they could face City or Chelsea as well in the draw. So maybe then the quadruple would be a bit harder to get. But right now, it's on.
Yeah, I know I shouldn't crap on the FA Cup, but, you know, when Norwich send their B team...
I mean, it's not that
it
entirely you know,
team, right? No, no, I understand anyway. That. They're fighting, right? And then I think there was one holdover from the League Cup final team on Sunday. Henderson.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, Henderson, that's it.
And then you can chuck Allison, obviously, but you know, he didn't stop.
Yeah, of course.
Whatever. I think they won. It's good.
Yeah. Inter and Milan serve up a fairly dull scoreless draw in the Coppa d'Italia semi-final first leg because you still have two legs, you archaic Italian people. This was pretty ugly, Gab, though, wasn't it? Was it because it's two legs, so they knew there was a second leg after?
And... It was ugly. I think there was tension. Milan obviously played Napoli this weekend, so their heads were there. Your boy Giroud, not his best game. No. And look, it's a derby. It's tense. But yeah, no, nothing good. And it doesn't make you think that these teams are in great form right now.
No.
Manchester City are also in the FA Cup quarterfinal after beating Peterborough 2-0. Jules, are you a bit surprised that the goals only came after an hour? Because this was a strong City team they sent out there.
Yeah, that unlike the Liverpool one, this was strong. I think the pitch being so bad didn't help. The fact that Peterborough played well and were really aggressive. And
why do Peterborough have a bad pitch? We live in this country where it rains all the time. It grows. Normally, even like small clubs have nice pitches. What?
Maybe for them it's better to be like this. Maybe they just don't have good gardeners. Maybe, or maybe it's too high, it rains too much in Peterborough. I don't even know where Peterborough is.
It's about an hour north. It's near your house. It's north of London.
Okay. And that's why, but I think there was also a feeling that they would come. So right. I don't think there was any panic from City, or they just knew that with times. And by the way, the Grealish goal, the ball from Foden is exceptional, the first touch as well. So players that quality at some point will always make a difference. Dusan Vlahovic made his return to Florence with Juventus as they took on Fiorentina in the other Coppa d'Italia semi-final first leg. And I bet he got quite the welcome, didn't he?
Well, look, the bad blood between Fiorentina and Juve goes back decades and decades. You know, I should remember Roberto Baggio coming back. Those of us who... There were riots when he was sold, riots against the ownership. And then I remember Baggio coming back and missing a penalty and somebody throwing the scarf, a Fiorentina scarf to him, and he picking it up with tears in his eyes. And I was like, what have I done?
Because you always said you didn't want to leave, didn't you?
No, and look, it's like Dante's Inferno. And in fact, they referenced Dante's Inferno. Yeah. The Fiorentina ultra is a fantastic choreography. And in the game, I'm sorry, Fiorentina played, I thought they played really well.
I agree.
Your boy Jonathan Ikone.
Oh, I hit the post. He could have scored two or three goals easily.
I know. He looked really good. And Juve's defense, they did have, they've got like nine players out.
Yeah.
They're running on fumes. They hung in there and they got super lucky with the goal. If you
such
look at
a
that.
Juventus.
It's just a, cross into the box from Danilo, one of the few Juve players I thought played pretty well. Him and Arthur. And then the ball just kind of bounces off of the defender.
Crazy
and he's in despair again. This is in like the fourth minute of injury time. You take what you can get if you're Juve right now.
Yeah.
The run continues. And you still have a second leg to come. And you don't take anything for granted.
Yeah.
Gonzalo Guedes, long-range strike, sends Valencia into the Copa del Rey final. Jose, are you happy for Javier Bordalas? Over Athletic,
at home with 35% of the ball, they win it that way.
Bordalas football, man.
Bordalas football, yeah. I mean, it's
got
a final.
Got the best of the Williams
course.
Brothers. And,
yeah, Peter Lim, I'm sure, would be happy. The ninth in La Liga, although they've had a pretty bad run of form, certainly in the league, before the win at the weekend. And this win is good for them. It's good for them. I think the difference was probably made in the first leg in Bilbao. I wanted another Basque derby, which was good because, Real Sociedad can also qualify for the final. But now it'd be Valencia who goes through.
Yeah, look, you know how I feel about Peter Lim.
Peter Lim,
and
yeah.
Then obviously when he brought in Bordalas, I'm like, oh, look, you've got another villain now next to you. That said, when I saw the way the Valencia fans celebrated, and I have a lot of time for them, given what they've had to go through.
Exactly.
With this and Mendes and Nuno and all the stuff over the years, you're happy for them.
Yeah, completely. Premier League clubs' captains will wear special armbands in Ukrainian colours this weekend. Gab, what do you make of it?
Look, I wrote a long column, long Q&A, after Russian clubs and Russian representative teams were banned by FIFA. And one of the things at the end, and it really struck me, change happens gradually, but we've become very comfortable now with football and football clubs taking political stances or what would have been once considered political stances.
Yeah.
Whether it's racism, whether it's LGBTQ, whether it's stuff like this. And it's not just in football. It's, look at the NBA moving the All-Star game out of Charlotte a few years ago.
Yeah.
I just think the world has changed, and now this is what people come to expect, one way or the other. I don't think there's any question, and there was a UN vote, whichever way you feel about it, there was a UN vote where 141 nations decided to condemn the invasion of Ukraine. And I think only five nations voted against it. And it's the usual suspects.
Yeah, we know who they are.
Yeah. So I look at this and I say, this represents what the majority of people in the Premier League, majority of Premier League fans want. So I don't have a problem with it. It stops becoming political when it's about human rights and it's about solidarity with people who are getting bombed.
Yeah, completely.
Back to Chelsea, but on the pitch, Jules.
Yeah.
They had to come from behind twice to beat Luton Town 3-2.
Yeah, it was tough. They conceded a goal in the second minute.
Can you blame the pitch again?
No. Because I think Luton, who are in really good form, doing really well in the Championship, it was always going to be a tricky game. The atmosphere is big. They were very aggressive again and, intense, all of that. I think the whole sale, Abramovich probably played a little bit. We heard Tuchel before saying that, even before the League Cup final, when he was nowhere near as...
And he's like, stop asking me these questions!
As important as... No, but he said, it's in your head. And that it would be, if you're the coach, more than the players.
He wasn't playing.
But he made a lot of changes. And in the end, it's Werner and Lukaku who scored the goals that bring them back into the game and then win them the game. So,
and Lukaku, very much a center forward's goal there.
Yeah.
The only thing I should say, like this guy, I don't follow the Championship, as you know, but this guy, Nathan Jones, has been talked about as being
really
one of the bright young things in management. So well done to them. But it's also true, Chelsea putting out very much,
You still have a lot of talent on that pitch. I thought Mount looked good in the first half, lively, and then Werner scored a goal, which in itself is a... But even he was a bit surprised that he actually finished it well.
And Saúl scored a goal,
and
too.
And Saúl scored a goal with his wrong foot. So,
trifecta.
Anything's happening right now at Chelsea. Tottenham, on the other hand, stumble out of the FA Cup against Middlesbrough from the Championship. Gab Conte says that he doesn't understand their ups and downs. Do you?
So, first of all, the performance against Middlesbrough was absolutely horrendous.
It was terrible.
It was atrocious. And, massive love to Middlesbrough, to Kay Murray,
yeah, great,
to Parmo, everybody. But Middlesbrough, I think, very fortunate against Manchester United. And against Spurs, they played well, but fortunate that the opposition had an absolute stinker of a game. I looked afterwards who the Tottenham fans are angry at. It seems to me that they're angry at Daniel Levy. They're angry at poor Emerson. They're angry a lot at the players. Conte, not so much. I got that impression. What was interesting to me was, you know, he made the point. He said, like, I need to motivate these players. I need to get inside their heads. Because after the Burnley game, I used a stick and we beat Leeds. After Leeds, I used a carrot and now we lose. So
I know, but he needs to take some responsibility now. I'm sorry, because it's never his fault again. And we both love him, and we rate him. But I'm sorry, you don't play with 11 men behind the ball away at Middlesbrough if it doesn't come from your manager. No one tells you to drop so deep if not your manager.
I agree with you 100% on this one. I think he needs to go. You know, he's there. You say but I think he's taking ownership. He says, I need to get these players to do what I want to do. I haven't been able to do that. I think he's taking ownership of that. This idea where I disagree with him is this idea that there's so many terrible players here. You're playing Middlesbrough. You should 100%. You can lose. This you should still play better. But I think the problems run far further. I mean, Son's miss. Emerson is like in a parallel universe.
Completely.
Le Parisien reporting that Paris Saint-Germain have offered Kylian Mbappe a ridiculous contract to keep him around. Jules, when I read about this, I saw the numbers. I didn't believe them, so I'm going to tell you. Hey, what are we talking about, and will it make him stay?
So we're talking about a two-year deal worth 200 million euros net. That's the package. There's a 100 million net bonus, and then there's 50 million euro net salary for the first year, and then for the second year, the club are not confirming or not denying it. Leonardo said in L'Equipe that it was not true, that they hadn't took numbers and money, which is not true either, trust me. So I'm not really sure exactly where the truth is. The truth is that they're pushing hard to keep him, even one more year, two more year maximum, with a lot of money, with a lot of promises, with a lot of, we're going to build a great team. You are the heart of it all. You want to be the poster boy. Here you are. You can beat the Cavani record, all goal record, all of that. Will that be enough to tempt him? I don't know. In Madrid, they're still convinced he's going to go.
So I love the 100 million signing bonus. You're basically buying him again, right?
Yeah, exactly. but I don't know. I want to believe him when him and his family is saying, we haven't decided yet. Maybe he has. Maybe he knows he's going to Real Madrid. I don't know. But I want to believe that he's still a bit in the air and there's still some hope for PSG. I would love him to stay, of course. Mike Riley, the head of the Premier League referees, has apologised to Frank Lampard and Everton. And Everton over the Rodri handball that we discussed on Monday's show in the game against City. Would you be happy with those apologies? I mean, apologies is great, but it's not going to bring you back a penalty, potentially 1 point or 3 points.
It's not, but I like Mike Riley personally as a person. I don't always agree with some of the things they said, and I think he's got not a good group of referees right now, and maybe that's probably his fault or not.
Yeah.
But I think it's good to have people come out and take ownership. You know, he came out and he said, like, Chris Kavanaugh should have had the referee look at it. He should have had Paul Tierney look at it and have him decide. Because you know what? This whole thing with like the elbow and the sleeve, even a child should know. These are guidelines. These aren't hard and fast rules. So if he's moving his whole body, it might still be handball. Or it might not be. Let the referee decide. Let the referee decide. Everything can go down. No,
I've had enough of apologies.
I haven't, because this is the first one that we get from the Premier League referees.
We've seen in other leagues apologizing.
But in England, this is the first one. I think it's important.
But it doesn't matter. Yeah, okay, fair enough. Would that make them better? I doubt it.
Leipzig beat up Hanover, and your boy Christopher Nkunku shines again. Jules, I think you said he was the third best French player in the world on Monday. Has he moved up to two? Is he closing the gap on Karim the Dream?
He's not really closing the gap on Karim the Dream. No one can. Kylian and Karim are still the top two, but he's third. 25 goals, 13 assists in 36 games. He's just incredible level. We know the Super League isn't dead, Gab. Juventus president Andrea Agnelli is expected to outline the new plans at the Financial Times Business of Football Summit in the next few hours. We're recording this on Thursday morning. But this one looks a bit different than the one that they did 2 years ago.
Yeah, and look, and we're going on speculation. This is what we've been told. He could decide that, I'm not going to talk about this. I'll talk about something else instead.
Maybe.
Certainly, Certainly, Alexander Čeferin, who spoke a few minutes ago as we record this, thinks that he's going to go be talking Super League, because this is a quote. He says, this is not a football project. He says they're living in a parallel world. You know, they tried to introduce the first one the first time around during a pandemic. Now they're doing it again during a war. So clearly, no love lost between the two, and he's going to fight this again. A couple of things that are interesting about this, based on the small, we'll talk about this more once we have the details, but the indication is that this will be a program where you're going to have a top flight and a second flight. You're going to have promotion and relegation
between the two, so it's
not going to be closed in that way. Again, it comes down to a fundamental point here that this can only happen with UEFA approval.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, if they try to break away and do it without UEFA approval, by statute, the Premier League sides cannot join. These are one of the new laws that have been passed.
Yeah, exactly.
So interesting to see what they're trying to do, whether there's some big compromise, whether this is the right way to do it. This looks a lot like, if you remember, it was one of the original proposals back when Andrea Agnelli was head of the European Clubs Association. They had like a tier one, tier two promotion, relegation.
A new Champions League format, which is going to be, right? This is going to be just a new Champions League with the UEFA approval.
That's kind of what they're talking about. But there's a reason people didn't go for that, because they said, I'm sorry, if Manchester United finished 12th, why should they get to be back in?
True.
Simply because, you know, they don't get relegated from the Champions League to the Europa League. I think that's a fair concept.
That's
obviously, commercially, it's a more sellable idea. But yeah, I think in terms of timing, Andrea Agnelli's timing on this one, not particularly good at all. I think people preoccupied with other things. I was quite enjoying the Versailles fairy tale in the French Cup, Jules, but I guess those Grinches at Nice decided not to be very nice. See what I did there? And ruined it all.
Well, yeah, they won 2-0 in the semi-final and will be in the final for the first time in 25 years. And for Versailles, it's hard because Nice were too good on the day. What's hard for them, I think, to swallow in a way, Gab, is this game should have been played at home. Because the draw was Versailles-Nice, not Nice-Versailles. The reason why it was played in Nice...
Because of floodlights.
Yeah, the famous floodlights that we mentioned before. Too close to the castle in Versailles, so you can't play at night time.
Why don't you play during the day?
Because you can't play during the day for the broadcasters and, you know, and all of that in midweek as well. They asked PSG for the Parc des Princes. They thought about the Stade de France. They looked all
PSG
around Paris.
PSG wouldn't let them have the Parc des Princes?
No.
Why not? Well, what are you going to do with
why.
It?
I don't know why. I don't know why. But it could not happen. So
what about Red Star? Or
I know. They asked PFC, the Charlotte Stadium. I think they ask everywhere. They could not. So Nice said, hey, we've got an idea. Why don't you play in our stadium? But we pay for your travel. We pay for... And we give you the gate revenue as well. So you're going to make some money. Okay, but you're going to play in front of 20,000 Nice fans instead of having played against in front of 5 or 10,000 of your fans, wherever you would have been.
Tell me again about the floodlights. You can't, because the ground is close to the Versailles Palace.
Too close, yeah.
You can't install floodlights.
No.
Not even temporary ones.
No.
For 2 hours, because what?
The floodlights would damage the inside, some of the rooms inside the castle, especially the former room of the king.
You can't put a tarpaulin up to protect it or something? Big curtains? Close the curtains for a couple hours? No?
I think they've tried everything. Jean-Luc Haribau, the former player who's now a pundit in France, who's also the general director of the club, tried everything, trust me. And in the end, maybe Nice would have been too good even if they played at home or at the Parc des Princes or wherever. But yeah, it's a bit of a shame that it just finishes that way.
You know what would have been cooler?
It was a great run.
You know, honestly, if they had played it on the grounds, on the lawns of the gardens around Versailles, put some jumpers down, make it
love
old school. Because that would have been
it.
From the other angle, right? So you could have had lighting around there. Just turn it into an event, man.
Yeah, I love it. Maybe for next year. Real Sociedad win away to Mallorca 2-0 as David Silva and Mikel Merino steal the show. Yeah, they dropped off after their strong start this year, but look, they're just 1 point behind the top four, so very much in the hunt.
They are, which I think says more about Barca and Atleti and some of the other teams around
them.
But they're still there, which is pretty amazing. David Silva's first goal this year, Mikel Merino, was outstanding. You forget what a technically gifted player he was. Good for him and all. They're there.
They're there.
You know, careful. Careful, Cholo.
Oh, yeah.
Careful, Xavi.
They're coming for you.
Nantes, once a major power in French football, are also in the French Cup final after beating Monaco on penalties, Jules. So it's not fair to call them necessarily a minnow, but We expected Monaco, no?
Yeah, we expected Monaco. Philippe Clement struggling a little bit, to be fair. He went on penalties. You know, we've got no extra time in France, so he went straight from the 90th minute to the penalty. And Rémy Descamps, the reserve goalkeeper for Nantes, was really good. Well done to Nantes and Antoine Comboiré, who does a great job there. First
former Paris Saint-Germain, former title-winning Paris Saint-Germain manager, no?
No, he was sacked before Carlo arrived when they were top of the table.
Okay, but he was, and then Carlo didn't win the title, so yeah, technically, okay.
Technically, maybe. He was certainly a winter champion, if you want to call it that way. But great job, first final in 22 years. And have two French coaches in the final is great. And by the way, Christophe Galtier can be one of the first, well, I think he'd be the third one in history to win as a French manager, the French League, the French Cup, and the French League Cup.
Of course, won the French League with Lille.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Andreas Christensen is a free agent in the summer, as we know, and he has been strongly linked with Barcelona, Gab, away from Chelsea. What do you think of it?
Like, in terms of the player he is, obviously you've got a ball-playing central defender. There's, and I say this in the most polite way possible, there is a little bit of the Gerard Piqué about him in terms of being tall and being comfortable on the ball.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit of the old Gerard Piqué about him in terms of not necessarily being super quick, which isn't somewhat understandable when you're 35 and you're Piqué, maybe less so when you're considerably younger and you're Christensen. I don't know that he has the leadership or he's been able to show that at Chelsea. I think Chelsea would like to keep him around. Well, all of this, of course, is subordinate because we don't know what Abramovich is going to do.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think the idea was for Chelsea to keep him around, but not at any price because they felt that you could get an upgrade. So I think he'd be a fit. I don't know, personality-wise, if he necessarily has the leadership. And if you would have him and Eric Garcia, if you have him and Araujo, fine. If you have him and Eric Garcia.
Yeah, it's a bit. If you could keep just one of Rudiger and Christensen or buy one of the two, whether if you're Chelsea or the buying club, would you keep Rudiger or buy Rudiger or sign Rudiger because they're both free?
I would go with Rudiger. I would go with
even
Rudiger.
Even if he's older?
Even if he's older, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
Le Parisien also reporting. Here's the second mention on the show.
Yeah,
your old stomping ground. How about that? But I don't believe the story for 1 minute. It says that Lionel Messi was angry at some of the ratings French newspapers gave him after the Paris Saint-Germain-Real Madrid game. For those who don't know, in Italy, in France, and in Spain, but it's a big deal in Italy.
Yeah,
I think it's an even bigger deal in France,
yeah,
especially with the keep, where after every game, somebody gives match ratings from 1 to 10,
yeah,
right?
The journalist who was covering the game who was at the stadium, yeah.
In addition to writing his match reports, goes and evaluates 22 different people. Yeah,
Out of 10.
That's logical, yeah?
Well, you watch the game. You know, some only do the ratings. I used to only do the ratings for Le Parisien, for the French national team, not the match report. So you focus purely on what the players are doing on the game. We take it very seriously. And Messi...
But do we believe Messi got a 3? Which is not good.
Which was ridiculous. Which is not good at all. Which after... okay, he missed the penalty. But apart from that, he had 101 touches, 5 key passes, created a lot. I mean, this was ridiculous to the account of a lot of people. Because in Le Parisien, for example, I think he had 6 out of 10. And he was a bit cross because... And you know how we know it? Because his closest friends and allies, then opened up about it and, you know, moaned about it. So Sergio Aguero said like, oh yeah, those guys at L'Equipe are like, I'm not going to repeat the swear word, but, you know, insulted them. Says Fabregas also said, this is outrageous. And that would not come without them obviously knowing that Messi, you know, Messi cared. And but rightly so, you would care. If you get a 3, but you've been rubbish, you go, okay, fair enough. I've been rubbish. I deserve a 3. If you've been good and you get a 3, you're like, hang on, what's the problem? They have a problem with me.
I guess he never struck me as somebody who necessarily cared what.
Maybe he does a bit more now that he's human again.
Maybe.
You know?
Maybe.
Super Mario Balotelli tells our buddy Neda Manua in The Athletic that among the many mistakes that he made through his career, the biggest one was leaving Man City. And maybe that he could have had the sort of career that Sergio Aguero had over there. What do you make of that?
So Mario's been very much in reflective mood. He's given several interviews like this. He might get called up.
Isn't it? Yeah,
look, and... You know, he said he's playing in Turkey now. He's doing okay. But it was interesting. You know, people forget he was very much in his pomp. He was, you know, man of the match in the FA Cup final, scored 2 goals in the 5-1 when City beat Manchester United at Old Trafford. 6-1, was it? And by the way, this isn't like dopey United. This is Sir Alex Ferguson's
exactly,
United.
Exactly.
Okay. And of course, he did set up the goal that, you know, Aguero's goal, right?
Yeah.
So it was a big deal. Euro 2012, he'd go on and he'd, you know, take Italy to the final. Not a great Italy side, but he did take them to the final, scored two goals against Germany in the semifinals.
Yeah.
Big, big deal. And, you know, maybe if he'd stayed, I don't think he would have had the career Aguero had, because he would still be Balotelli. He also, the same interview, he talks about
how
people were always talking about him. People were always coming up with stories, some of which were true, some of which weren't.
Yeah.
He's just been in the eye of the storm a lot. And I think he's reached that point where he realizes, you know, he's the wrong side of 30. Mm-hmm. He's made mistakes. He can't dial back the clock, but there are, he can still control a few things in his career and the time he has left.
Yeah.
Oh, the other thing that everybody focused on was that the story that Nadim told us before, when he came in, and this is kind of the old Balotelli, he came in and he said, ah, Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo, yeah, they're good, but, you know, I'm on their level.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, this was in 2012.
Yeah.
When they'd only won a couple Ballon d'Ors each,
you know,
not as many as they've won now. And he said, like, look, the difference between me and them, like, technically, I don't necessarily think there's a huge difference between me and them. He said, mentally, there's a massive difference.
Yeah.
Had I stuck around and been better, would I have won as much as them? No. I might have only won one Ballon d'Or, he said.
Yeah,
that was also.
But the talent was never a problem for Mario. We've seen so many players super talented, but the rest wasn't there.
Yeah.
So that's the difference between.
There's a whole mental side
class,
of it.
Exactly.
And the other thing, though, even just on talent and technical ability, yes, Mario is great, was great, but let's not even suggest that he's in the same galaxy as those two guys.
Exactly.
Matteo Guendouzi is apparently a Marseille player now. He still doesn't like Mikel Arteta.
No, he's played 38 games for Marseille, so the clause is triggered that the loan becomes permanent. I think it's 11 million maybe or something like that.
Ka-ching.
Yeah, that would go to Arsenal. They bought him for 8 from Lorient 3 years ago now or something, 4 years ago. They didn't get on. You know, they've had issues in the past. He wanted to move on. He's playing really well at Marseille. He's had a child since, you know, I think he's more mature, he's evolved as well. So I think this is, again, a bit like Aubameyang. This is what suits everyone. Arteta, Guendouzi, Arsenal. Although I would have liked to see him back at Arsenal and play, because I think he is very talented, but it's not going to happen.
And he's got big hair.
The hair contrast.
Sorry, not to go. But like, you look at
him and Arteta.
Him and Arteta. First of all, Arteta's like, it's like a, it looks like it's painted onto his head, right?
Yeah.
And then him and Sampaoli, of course, doesn't have any hair.
Can someone eat us up, do you think, on Twitter with Photoshop of Arteta's face with Guendouzi hair and then Guendouzi's face with Arteta hair? And then we can see.
I think that is an excellent use of people's time. Please, if you can do the face swap thing.
Photoshop, please hit us up on Twitter.
We will love you for a long time.
UEFA have set up a 1 million euro emergency fund. Let's go back to serious things. For Ukrainian children, Gab, it's good to see football stepping up, right?
Yeah, look, a lot of clubs have done different things. You know, when we hear these large numbers, 1 million, it's kind of like 1 million, 10 million, 100,000. You know, like it's hard to put it in context.
Mm-hmm.
What is important is that UEFA haven't just you know, set this money aside. But like the Shakhtar Donetsk players, the Brazilians who managed to get out, a lot of people, they talked about how UEFA and FIFA have intervened or had intervened to try to get them out. And I think this is an important role that football plays as well. You know, not abandoning these guys, but doing their part for people within football. So I think people are pitching in. I think there's just been a tremendous amount of solidarity.
Yeah, completely.
Blaise Matuidi has left Inter Miami. Are we going to see him again, or is this the end of the line for the soon-to-be 35-year-old world champion?
So what's interesting is he has left, but not really left, because he's not part of the squad, the first-team squad, but he's a club ambassador, which means that he's still going to get his money. He's going to train with the kind of reserve, sometimes with the first team, but he's not technically an Inter player anymore. But he's still a little bit, he's still an employee of the club. He gets his money, and then at the end of the European season, then so in 3 months or something, He will then maybe make a call on coming back to Europe. So basically, it's like a gardening leave in a way, but not really. He still has the title of an ambassador from Inter Miami, which is true. I mean, I just
find it fascinating. Wouldn't you rather want to keep him if you're already playing him? Would you not want to keep him and play him? What?
Well, clearly,
Phil Neville, hello.
Phil Neville doesn't think he's any good anymore. Otherwise, you keep him and then sell him in the summer. But
you're still paying for him, so you might as well play. I mean, I know you might not think he's that good, but...
But then, on the other hand, he still has 18 months left on his contract, I think, with Inter Miami. So if you're not going to put him in the squad, either you terminate his contract and pay him off completely. But clearly, I mean, I don't know. It's like, well, okay, is he really that bad now that you don't really want to play him at all or what? It's
so
crazy.
Weird.
Well, let's see what he does. But I think we will see him again. I would love him to go back to Troyes in France and just... finish the career where he all started all those years ago. So let's see. Gab, we discussed this last week, but Russia and Russian clubs have been suspended by FIFA as a result of the situation in Ukraine. And then we've had also other examples of things happening around those clubs. Ivan Rakitsky, the Ukrainian international, has left Zenit. Markus Gisdol, the German manager, has left his coach as manager of Lokomotiv Moscow. Daniel Farker did the same at Krasnodar. And the online sniping between Artem Zubia and Andriy Yarmolenko as well was quite interesting. This is a reminder that football is very much part of the life, you know, of those two countries.
It really is. And it's, you know, look, we could look at these people. I think every single one of these people we've mentioned is probably a millionaire. Maybe not Daniel Farke, but the other ones.
So
you can say, oh, look, it doesn't affect you. But these are still people who thought they had jobs and they're giving up. You know, they're making a stand because of the situation they're in and their beliefs. And I include Artem Zuba in it. Like, there's a lot of people who don't like him for different reasons. But equally, you know, when he comes out and he says, you know, look, I'm Russian and I'm proud. This is what my country's done. And Yarmolenko, I think, really having a go at him personally. You don't know what to say, but you realize how this is so intrinsic. When you're in this situation, you're asked to pick sides, and you know you can say this is above my remit. I don't want to talk about politics, or you feel the need to speak to speak up and make a stand. We've had other people leave Russia. I mean, I think to some degree it's also perhaps about the economic conditions. It's not about the safety.
Yeah, of course.
Certainly Rakitsky could not be expected to continue at Zenit. And I think Zenit were quite understanding about that as well. But it just shows you that, you know, this is the reality that we're living in right now.
Yeah.
Speaking of reality, Ronald Koeman came out and suggested
the Dutch guy
that if he'd had all the time that Xavi'd been given, he might have done a better job. So you drew a parallel between himself and Xavi.
Exactly. Some very interesting quotes from the Dutch guy, who's clearly still very bitter by the way his tenure at the club finished, in the sense that, you're right, he said, I was not given as much time as Xavi, and Laporta told me that Xavi would 1,000 times that he would not come because he was not experienced enough, and they told me that Messi had to go, and then they signed Torres for 55 million, so why did Messi have to go? And like, okay.
Well, he's got a point on that last one.
Well, he's got a lot of questions.
The Messi thing remains unexplained mystery.
Okay,
but
he's got a lot of questions, fair enough. Well, I'm not sure he's going to get the answers by doing this and the interview and stuff. Speak to Laporta, he's going to tell you. But you can also move on now, the Dutch guy. You don't need to be bitter.
Right.
I know, but like you said, I wanted to be a successful manager at Barcelona, but you were not good enough anyway.
Okay, that is a fair point to say that he wasn't good enough, but I think it's okay for him. I don't have a problem with him now speaking out, getting these things off his chest.
No,
because,
I guess
you know, if, and we have to take his word for it, but if you go to Laporta and Laporta's like, no, we're not getting Xavi, you know, and then Xavi turns up.
But how old is Ronald Koeman? Because this is the last time I speak about him, so I say his name for the last time. Okay. How long has he been in football?
A long
40
time.
40 years? What, and this is surprising him that Laporta said, oh, we're not going to bring Xavi, and then guess what? Xavi comes. I mean, come on. This is not Care Bear world. We all know how these big clubs work, right?
This is fine, but I also think it's okay afterwards to come out and make this point. Now, do I believe that Ronald Koeman would have done as well as Xavi if he'd stuck around and they had bought Alba, Mayang, and Adama Traore? By the way, you know, we're talking Alba, Adama Traore, Ferran Torres injured half a season, 40-year-old Dani Alves, who they've signed. It's not like they've gone out and Xavi suddenly has
and
the
he
benefit.
Also got the players that he wanted Aguero, he wanted Memphis. I know exactly. He got them. So
no, I don't believe. I don't believe he could have necessarily done what Xavi did. But also, you're not Xavi. Exactly. You're somebody else. You're somebody else who was hired by a different president who inherited a situation. Sometimes you have to live with it. But again, I don't fault him at all for coming out and speaking out.
Okay. Well, sticking with Barcelona, we also heard from Joan Laporta that he wanted his own cryptocurrency. What is this about?
Yeah. It's funny because we've touched upon crypto. We've touched upon NFTs.
Yeah.
And the people don't understand. Some people really understand them. Some people don't understand them. We've seen, you know, companies like Socios make these deals with clubs like Arsenal and Inter Milan and whatnot. He comes out. He talks about this, that they're going to be innovative and on the forefront, which to me sounds to me like, oh, look, they're planning something. Weirdly, the NFT fan token for a club like Barcelona, which actually has voting members, there might be some blockchain technology which would be very useful there and might have some value. Maybe not a tradable fan token or a speculative asset that way. What he's talking about with having Barcelona's own crypto, to me, makes no sense to me. I don't know what you want to do. You know, maybe some...
Well, so when you want to go to the museum, you need to pay you in with the cryptocurrency of the club? Or
I have no idea.
To buy shirts?
What he's going with it. But, you know... Crypto, NFT, these are buzzwords. You appear cutting edge without necessarily saying anything. I reserve judgment until I see the actual project. ESPN's Rob Dawson and others reporting that Carlo Ancelotti is a candidate for the Manchester United job if he leaves Real Madrid and if United don't get their first choice candidates.
Yeah.
Does this make sense to you?
There's a lot of if in this, of course. Listen, for me... Carlo Ancelotti is always a good idea. Whoever you are, whatever club you are, whatever situation you're in, it's always a good idea. For him, would that be a good idea? I think he would make this team be much better than what it is now, for sure. I think it needs a bit of help in recruitment, but of course it's a good idea. I still think you should aim for your number one or number two target on your shortlist before taking another, because he would be a bit of an interim manager, really. He would not be there for the next 10 years, right? The idea for them is to bring him for one season, maybe two, and then get Ten Hag or Poch.
This is what really does my head in about this whole situation. You know my thoughts on Carlo. He's a warrior of the light and all this stuff, right? So Carlo Ancelotti has a job right now. Correct me if I'm wrong, right?
Yeah.
He's managing a small, tiny club called Real Madrid.
Plays in white.
Right?
In white.
We're still in the Champions League or top of La Liga. So you're assuming that, if we don't get our first choice... And if we don't get our second choice, we'll just go and get this guy who's at another club right now and has a contract.
Yeah.
Because what? We think he's going to get fired? We think he's going to quit? And we're like, let me swap Madrid for Manchester and come running to you because I've always dreamed of managing this club, which has been managed like a giant turd for the last 10 years, right? And it's not always the fault of the coach.
Yeah.
I don't... The sheer presumption, the sheer ignorance of this. Would he do a good job there? Sure. But also, what does it say to you? I go from Eric Ten Hag to Carlo Ancelotti to... It's just a scattergun, to Pochettino, scattergun. Come on, man. Seriously.
I don't think this kind of stuff...
It's not helpful.
...United any good whatsoever.
Yeah, whatever paid lickspittle goes and puts these stories out and reports them from the inside,
you're making
United look worse.
Exactly. Pele is out of hospital, Gav, which is great news for Orey.
Of course. 81 we're always touched by this. 80, we wish 81. Him well. 81 years old. Keep it up and hope to see him in Qatar.
Yeah.
All right, Jules, that brings us to an end. That's all we've got time for today, but we got to come back on Monday because it's a big, big weekend of football.
Oh, yes. Manchester Derby.
How about that?
Milan
against Napoli. Plenty going on. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.